The number one resolution for people last year was to save more money, but nearly half gave up by February. Don't let that be you. Download Rocket Money to reach your financial goals this year. Track your spending, cut waste, and automate savings in one simple app. Rocket Money shows you all your expenses and categorizes them so you know exactly where your money's going and where you're overspending. From there, the app cuts waste by canceling your unused subscriptions and lowering your bills. No customer service needed. With that money freed up, the app will automatically set some cash aside for your goals, whether it's an emergency fund, paying off debt, or saving for vacation. Rocket Money's got you covered. Users love the app with over 186,000 five-star ratings. And on average, users can save up to $740 a year when using all of the app's premium features. Make saving money a priority this year. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel to get started. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
A missing person is a person who has vanished and is unconfirmed as alive or dead, as their location and fate are unknown.
Hey everyone, welcome back to Down the Rabbit Holes podcast. I'm Melissa.
And I'm Amy. How's that heat wave going?
Oh, we've had more days over 100. We're actually breaking records left and right. So, you know, be jealous. But we've actually, the last few nights, gotten a thunderstorm that has helped, I guess.
Oh.
So.
I mean, my first impression of that is that sounds horrible. But you know what? It's true. Like, a nice rain often cools things down. So I'm all for it. Love a good thunderstorm.
Yeah. We're actually getting one right now. So good luck.
Good luck with this recording. Awesome.
That's what I'm saying.
So I have a case for you today.
I'm excited.
Good. You should be. Because, you know, we say I'm excited every week, and it's probably like, you guys, it doesn't take much to excite you, but I love a good story.
I do too. And the one thing I would say is, because we do this, I find myself either researching, watching a case I'm interested in, not a missing persons, or not watching a lot of documentaries, because I do this a lot. And sometimes I'm like, okay, I don't want to research. So this is my, like, true crime fix, really.
Right. I agree. That's how I feel when I'm waiting for you to tell me something. And you just made me think of something else really fast. Sure. This quarantine has left me with no documentaries, no television shows. I've already watched the Unsolved Mysteries thing. I'm caught up on Dateline. As a matter of fact, everything's like a repeat for me. So instead of offering me your theories, scratch that. Offer me your theories about this case, but also offer me some recommendations for Netflix, Hulu, whatever, because I really feel like I've seen it all and I need something. Send me your recommendations. All right, so the case that I'm bringing to you all today is the case of Michael Negrete, or Negrete. I've heard it said two ways, but we're not going to call him by his full name the whole time. So Michael Negrete was born on March 25th of 1981. He's almost your age and my age, Melissa.
Okay.
So this case definitely resonates with me, and I'll tell you why in a minute. He lived with his parents and his two younger brothers in California, and after finishing high school at 18, he was accepted into the University of California in Los Angeles. Michael's reported as all positive things. He's a really nice guy. He's well-liked. He's kind. He got good grades. He stayed out of trouble. He liked video games, and he liked computers, which, who didn't? They were practically brand new back then. I hate to say it, but yeah.
Right.
Most families didn't have one until around that time. He also played the trumpet and the steel drum. Making friends seemed to come really easy for Michael, so it's no wonder that he acclimated well to UCLA. He's making friends, and he's adjusting. Michael lived on campus, which by all accounts was fairly busy and also bustling with young people, engaging in activities, friends, late nights, get-togethers, the whole college experience. And, you know, don't forget this college is in a big city. So he happened to get into the school on a music scholarship. So he's not just playing for fun. Like, he's probably a really talented musician. This brings us to December 10th of 1999. So if you've ever gone to college, you know that this is a time in the school year for college students that it's really busy. It's all over the place. People are getting ready for finals. There's a lot of anxiety because of finals. They're also looking forward to, or maybe not looking forward to, a long break from school. You'll see a lot more studying, but also likely a lot more parties and late nights. And on this particular night of 1999, which actually starts on December 10th, Michael attended a party. Now, from what I understand, this party was in the bottom floor of the dorm at Dykstra Hall, which is where Michael lived. And when I think of a party, I'm like thinking of a college frat party from movies. People stuffed into one space. There's kegs, there's music, there's nowhere to move. People are dancing, whatever. I just can't picture something like that on the first floor of a dorm. So I kind of think it's just really a get together, but I don't think that it matters all that much.
Yeah, I picture how our college experience was. All the doors in the same hall open, people just like bring their friends and you kind of spill out into the hallway and go from room to room. And I picture more of it like that, I guess.
Yeah, that's exactly how I picture it. But I don't think that it has a lot of relevance because this isn't the point where anything happens to him. So Michael leaves the party or the get together, whatever you want to call it. And he goes back to his dorm to play video games. The game eventually ended and it was really, really late. When I read it, I'm like, oh my gosh, that's like when I'm getting up to go to the gym. But whatever, I'm not young anymore. And Michael decided to go and congratulate the other player. So he leaves his room and he goes and does that. It was confirmed that he left this other person's room around 4:30 a.m. And there's not really any discrepancy about that. At 9 o'clock a.m., Michael's roommate woke up and Michael was not there. Everything was left in the room. So Michael's wallet, his keys, even though he didn't have his car there, his shoes and his instruments, all there. Police were called in. There's no details that they either took too long to start investigating or, you know, they jumped right in. There's not really a timeline that I could find about that. But it seems that pretty quickly they took it seriously because very shortly after they brought in tracking dogs.
Hey, can I just say that this irritates me, not because Michael didn't deserve it, because he totally did. But here's a college guy who left at 4:30 and he wasn't there when his roommate woke up in the morning. And police come in and are like bringing the dogs, right? He could have just had a one night stand and gone home with someone, right? I'm not saying this would happen. I'm just saying you're in college. Then you have people that are missing and people are told wait 48 hours to report them missing. Sorry, I didn't mean to get sidetracked. It always impresses me when they move quickly, but also annoys me for that reason.
Yes, I hear what you're saying. So the dogs were brought in, and they tracked his scent all the way to, well, they tracked his scent all the way to the intersection area of Sunset Boulevard and Bellagio Road. I will try and post a map so that you can see this. Now, the way that the dogs tracked seemed like it was in a very peculiar pattern. And I'll get more into that later, but just so you can kind of get a picture. So from where his dorm was, Dykstra Hall, to this particular intersection, I don't know the mileage per se, but it appears as if it's clear across campus. So I don't know exactly what that means. After this, there's nothing. There's no trace of Michael anywhere till this day. It's about 20 years later. He's never been seen again. There's been no sightings. There's been no bank account activity. His money has never been touched. And that's where the story ends. Now, there's a lot of information out there about this particular case, but there have been really no developments since his disappearance. So that brings us to theories. And I always want listed as a possibility, but kind of talk you through the potential leaving your life. I personally don't think that he left his life at this point. Reasons being is that he's on a music scholarship for school. He's doing well. It's not as if he's failing and he's stressed out about everything. I mean, he probably did experience some level of stress, but nothing to make you leave your life. He's doing well in school. He's from a good family and they seem to have good relationships. He had no cash or no supplies and no issues in his friendships or with acquaintances that we know of. So I see no good reason to leave your life. There are some things posted on like Reddit that suggest that he could have had a mental break or that he could have been homosexual. Those are absent from the actual articles that I read about him or statements that I've come across from family or friends. So I kind of write them off because it seems like complete and utter speculation. So I don't know if you're kind of with me on that one. If you, anything you heard kind of sparked anything within you that was like, yeah, he probably left his life.
No, and the fact that he left his instruments for a musician, I feel like is a big thing too. If he would have left his life, I would think that, I don't know, I feel like if you leave your life, like you're going to take something that's important to you.
Right, and I just don't know how someone who probably hasn't had more than perhaps a part-time job, and I don't even know that for a fact, and has his wallet left in his dorm room and his bank accounts untouched, would have succeeded with leaving his life. So I don't know about that one. I just don't think it's plausible.
I agree with that.
Another theory is perhaps Michael was talking with someone. He decided to have some sort of late night hookup, which would not be an unusual thing in college. But there seems to be no evidence of this. Now, when I say that, it's really hard for me to say there's no evidence because there might have been evidence. My understanding is that they did eventually, or police eventually, obtained the hard drive from Michael's computer. But whatever happened, I'm not really sure. Everything was wiped. Now, it doesn't look intentional or anything. It looks like just really bad luck, maybe. So any information that they could have gotten about who he was talking to is no longer there.
I don't know about that. I mean,
well, you have to consider if that happened, then what did he encounter that ultimately made him disappear off the face of the earth?
And this is 1999, so their cell phones are in existence, but not prevalent like they are now.
Correct.
So do police think he left his room voluntarily?
So I believe that police think that after he left the opponent's room, the one that he went to congratulate, that he left the dorm. And even though it was kind of inconclusive about Michael's path towards Sunset and Bellagio, that could be something. That could be a route that he took. My thoughts about that, though, are this is the place that he lives. These dogs could have been following an old scent. I mean, how many times did we walk across campus at our school? And it was small, but still, I can't tell you the amount of times that I walked from one end of campus to another.
Agreed, 100%. Especially, we had cars up there, but like if you couldn't find parking and you ended up in a different spot, or if you're meeting someone or classes were all over.
So I can't come to any conclusion about that. If I'm looking at a map, and this is a present day map, so I do have to take into consideration that maybe 20 years ago, the campus did look a little bit different, but there's fields and stuff. It is plausible that he could have met with a female or something like that for a late night hookup. I don't know. However, what could have happened that he disappeared off the face of the earth? Because if you go to meet with someone to hang out or whatever, and it's someone that you want to be intimate with, chances are, in a lot of cases, that person probably isn't looking to harm you, right?
I mean, that's a...
You get intimate, you go your own ways. Is that a reach?
No, I don't think that's a reach. However, I mean, I guess I would say hookup culture is different now, I think, by reading the, like, social media and the media. I've been, you know, married forever, so it's not my... I'm not in that world, but I know people that are dating or that, you know, are in college. And it's just a different world then. But I think about back when we were in college and when we were in high school, the world, I guess, felt safer. Maybe it was us being naive. Maybe it was being sheltered. But I feel like, yes, what you're saying is accurate in that if he hooked up with someone, they weren't looking to harm him. So is there, there's no, so he, we don't think he went back to his room. Is that correct?
Well, I think it's hard to say. Well, there's another theory out there that actually believes he might not have ever left the dorm, which means whatever happened to him happened in Dykstra Hall. And there could be a dozen reasons for that. I mean, he could have made someone jealous at the get-together or party or whatever you want to call it. You know, he could have, you know, passed someone that was drunk and, you know, or high or under the influence. Or a tragic accident could have happened and someone thought they were going to get blamed. Really, the possibilities are endless without any evidence to point you in any direction. Then you have to consider, how did one or more people remove Michael from Dykstra Hall before break? Because they usually have to clear out their dorm room.
Right.
And people clean it.
Okay, so I don't think something happened in his dorm.
Okay, I'm inclined to agree with you. But what do you think happened? Well, let me just tell you a couple other things first before you go there.
Okay.
Because I don't know if it'll change anything for you.
Okay.
So there are probably three other theories, honestly. One is that an old friend or an acquaintance of Michael's father, who I guess was a gamer of some sorts, was talking with Michael and they met up and something terrible happened. I don't really know about that one. I don't even want to throw his name out there because he seems kind of like all over all the media that I've read, but there seems to be no good evidence, so I'm not really comfortable throwing his name out there. And then another theory is that a known sex offender lived in the area. He also kind of matched a description that was given. But aside from those two things in common, there's really no other evidence that would link that person. And then finally, there is the thought that he was kidnapped and his organs were harvested and sold.
What?
Yeah.
Is that something that was prevalent in L.A. back then?
I'm not really positive. And yeah, I probably should have looked into that one. But those were the ones I kind of found it hard to consider, honestly. He's a bigger kid. Like, he's an adult is what I'm saying. And you'd have to be pretty brave, even at 4 a.m., 4:35 on a college campus. So if he leaves this opponent's room at 4:30 a.m., and if the tracking dogs are in fact correct, I could see it taking a good 15 to 20 minutes to cross campus, which would bring you near 5 a.m., in L.A. My thought would be that while college kids probably aren't up unless they're going to bed at that time, there are people getting ready for work and driving.
Or if they're athletes, college athletes are up that early.
They might be, or even people getting their morning run in. You'd have to be pretty brazen at that time to try and kind of jump someone, whether it be for organs, whether it be because you're a sex offender or whatever.
So how does the dad's friend fit in? They just game together online?
So I kind of think that it was many coincidences that brought him into the investigation. First, his daughter was murdered quite some time before this. He kind of resembled a sketch. He was a gamer. I think that he sold games and stuff sometime before the disappearance. He was living in certain places where other people ended up going missing. So I think that all of these things kind of perked up investigators to investigating him. But, you know, like I said, nothing came of it. And these were not any concrete leads. So he basically was ruled out eventually.
Well, how did he even get mixed up into it? That's my question.
He was a friend of Michael's father, and he happened to live in the area at the time where Michael disappeared. I think in combination with the kind of resemblance to the police sketch, that's how that kind of came about.
Okay. I don't like any of this.
No, and for there to be absolutely no evidence.
I think I figured out where the body harvest organs came from. So
where's that?
In 2004, UCLA had a scandal for people that were selling body parts. Mm. And it was the scandal happened from 98 to 2003.
Yes.
And they were selling cadaver body parts. Two people got arrested, a bunch got in trouble, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. But they were harvesting organs to sell. But they weren't killing people for it. It was cadavers and donated corpses for medical research because UCLA is a huge medical research hospital.
Right. Well, here's the problem with that, though, is that if something like that happened, it would have been incredible luck, for lack of better words, because it wouldn't have been, that Michael was at the right place at the right time for a predator. He would have had no reason to, something, if he left the dorm, something would have brought him out there, right?
Right, but what I'm saying is for this, I mean, this could be not related, but my guess is this is what, because it's happening in the same time period.
Yes.
But it was not like they were killing people. It was cadavers. They were selling body parts. But because they were harvesting organs at the college, that, to me, makes logical sense for a connection.
Yes. That absolutely makes sense.
Okay. So I guess if we don't think he went back to his room, I mean, could it have been someone he was playing video games with?
Everyone they questioned is basically of, I don't know what happened.
Well, right. I mean, that's fine, but you don't know everyone you play video games with online.
Well, they wouldn't know since his hard drive was basically ruined.
And I think about, like, my husband plays video games online. And, you know, he plays with other people. He doesn't know them. They're just all in the same, I don't even know what you would call it, like, team, I guess.
Yeah.
And, I mean, there's a chat box, right? So you can talk to each other.
Yeah.
Now, my husband wants no part of that. He, like, shuts out. He doesn't wear a headset or any of that because he doesn't want to be involved in those conversations. And I'm not saying it was that technologically advanced in 1999, but is it possible he encountered someone and they also went to the same college as him or whatever, and they arranged to meet after he left his friend's dorm room?
Yes, it is possible. Okay. But what would be a motive for harming
him?
Maybe
he beat them in the video game. And I'm not even trying to be funny. Like, people are crazy. And I think, for me, what I think about is people now, right, in 2020, kill people over their fence being built on their property line, right?
Like,
there is crazy things that people kill people over, right?
You bet.
I don't think that just started happening. I think that with social media and the media what it is, we're seeing more exposure to it.
Yes, absolutely.
So when we try to apply that logic of, like, why kill someone in 1999, well, people are nuts.
Yes, they are.
If we came up with motive in every case...
But we need reasons.
Oh, I mean, agreed, 100%. You know, but on the flip side,
And why would you meet outside? I mean, it's December, but it's L.A. It's not freezing, so I guess it's plausible to be comfortably outside. But
I didn't know he met outside. He just didn't go back to his dorm room.
Well, that's true. That's true. But then they single-handedly took care of a body?
For all we know, he met someone that had a car, and he willingly got into it.
Yes, that's true, too.
You know, hey, we're going to go to, like, a diner at 5 a.m. Maybe his roommate wanted you to drive 3 hours to go home at 4 in the morning because they got in a fight with their boyfriend. I'm just saying, crazier things have happened.
There's actually another theory, too, but it's not... I know that we'll be able to write it off pretty fast with what we know at this point. That Michael could have been experimenting with drugs and kind of wandered onto campus and... fell into a construction site because there was construction being done.
Brian Schaefer.
Exactly. But now we know from our listener that educated us that there's a lot of inspection that goes into, and I'm sure on a college campus too. Can you imagine the liability with children? Because they are somebody's children. Of right. Inspecting a site before you concrete something. So I kind of want to write that off.
And my thing with this is the same with Brian Schaefer. Like It'd be different if someone murdered him and buried him in the construction site and it wasn't visible by the naked eye, right?
Yes.
But if they are visible, even if they're in a hole and visible, the hole's not 100 feet deep. You know, they're what, maybe 7, 8, 9 feet deep? That's a pool.
Right.
Like, how that happens, I don't know.
And it's a college campus. Like, if this happened... at 5 a.m., within no time, people are hustling and bustling on campus. People yeah, were quickly agreed. Looking for him. And I'm sure one of the first couple of places they've looked is the construction sites.
Well, yeah, that makes sense.
That's where I get caught up, too, is that at almost 5 a.m., when the day is starting... how could something have happened so fast that no one on a college campus has seen, that no one outside of the campus that actually lives and works in the area did not see? Like, I don't understand.
Yeah, I support that. I think that even if he was using drugs or whatever, which if there's no, you know, prior history, do people experiment in college? Sure. But I immediately almost want to write off some sort of an overdose or dying by suicide in the same sentence almost because where's the body?
Well, yes. Yes, I absolutely agree with you.
I mean, I think that if he's not found in the area, right? I think that someone had to have a vehicle. And at 5 a.m., I would think getting him into a vehicle had to be somewhat voluntary.
Yes.
Because although we look at the three girls in Fort Worth that just got in a car in the middle of the afternoon, or we think they got in a van, like we don't know.
Right.
I would think it had to be somewhat voluntary because of people around them. Then I think about the case of Kelsey Smith, which if you don't know it, in like at 7 o'clock, so it's summer. So she walked outside of Target, and within a split second, someone pushed her into her car and kidnapped her and ended up killing her.
Oh, no.
But it was broad daylight in a Target parking lot, and it's one my sister and I constantly talk about because, you know, walking out of Target in the middle of in daylight, I am comfortable. You know, it's where I'm on my phone, I'm doing all the things. It's not somewhere where my sense of, you know, being aware of my surroundings is heightened. It's not a parking deck. It's not somewhere that I feel unsafe.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I say, oh, it's 5 in the morning and had to have been somewhat willingly. But then I think of Kelsey Smith and that was 7 o'clock in a Target parking lot.
Right.
So maybe it wasn't willing. I don't know. I don't know.
Well, what I can tell you is I don't think that he died or met with foul play in the dorm.
I agree.
I just don't think that it would be easy to pull off without any notice whatsoever right at the end of the term, harming someone and getting them out of there. I think that he did leave his dorm. I don't know why, but he met with some kind of foul play outside. I don't think that it was a hookup gone wrong.
So you think it was completely random?
I don't necessarily think that it was random because he seemed to be en route to something. It would be really unlucky to meet with foul play just by chance.
So what do you think then?
I guess I don't really know what I think. Like, what if he was playing games and betting money and he owed someone money? There's nothing to support that. There's nothing to discount that either. But like, what if he lost and owed someone money? So he had to, and maybe he didn't have it.
So what? He went to meet them at 4 a.m. to tell them he didn't have it? Why not just wait till the next day?
What if that person was like, I want my money now?
I would think he's at least somewhat secure in his dorm room. Because I would think that, like, UCLA, right, the dorm rooms there were not like ours, where we were in the sticks. If anyone walks by, you would hold the door for them, right? I mean, let's be real. There was no sort of security in our buildings in college.
No.
If they looked like this, they were a student, you let them in, right? But then I think of, like, I went to visit a friend of mine at Northeastern. And you had to, like, sign in, and they had a front desk person. I picture UCLA being more like that, where you have to have your ID. You have to be with a student. You can't just say, hey, I'm here to visit. Okay, who? They have to say that you're approved.
I hear your point.
So what I'm saying is, though, that he was probably safe in the dorm. Why would he leave to go meet someone if he thought there was risk of danger at 4 a.m?
My only guess would be maybe he didn't think there would be danger.
Well, I mean, you have to know it's going to be a rough conversation if you owe some money and you're going to meet them to tell them you don't have it.
It could have been a friend who brought another friend, and that other friend became really mad. I don't know. And like I said, I'm really just taking off down a rabbit hole. There's nothing to substantiate this.
I mean, it's as likely as the next one, though. I mean, for me, that's as likely as being kidnapped to harvest his organs.
I would agree with that. I think it's actually more likely than something like that, but I don't know.
So do we know what his family thinks?
The only thing that I read, and I believe it was in one of the articles that referencing a blog that Michael's brother had, that suspected maybe he was like just dabbling in drugs, which I just want to make very clear that a lot of college kids experiment. It's a very typical thing. A lot of kids do it. Some could argue that it's the norm. With that being said, I want to say that it's risky, and I'm not advocating that just because it's maybe seen as society as normal that it's a recommendation or something. No. It's risky, it's dangerous for you mentally and physically and all that, so I don't want it to make it sound like that. And I have to say that because I want to protect him if he did use substances, if he was experimenting with something, because no one would deserve something that happened to them if it was in fact foul play, just because of the experimentation. That's my soapbox.
200% agreed. Yeah, and I think we say that a lot, is it doesn't matter what someone did or didn't do or said or didn't say. If something terrible happened to them, they didn't deserve it.
So maybe he met with foul play because he was inebriated, or maybe he met with a terrible ending due to an accident. I'm not sure. I don't know if his brother elaborated on it. But that's the only thing that I know of that his family has said.
Okay. So his family thinks that drugs may be involved. Which doesn't help at all, really, because how did he leave his dorm?
Right.
You know, that's where we still end up.
There's no cameras or anything, so we don't know for sure. So what I can say is basically what I told you. I don't think that he met with Harm in the dorm. I think that he left for a reason. I don't think that he went on like a little stroll. I think the reason that he left could have been related. And while it's a possibility that it was coincidental foul play, I think that's a little less likely. And that's where I stand. That's the only place I feel like I can stand, honestly.
Yeah, I agree with that. And I, you know, one thing that I did think in my head was if something happened in the dorm, people would hear it. But it's a college dorm. How many times do we ignore noises?
I can't count.
Yeah, so I chalked that up to just being like, oh, it's a party going on. Yeah, I don't know. I agree with you. I think he left voluntarily. I don't know what that looks like. I don't know why. I don't know how or any of that. Once he got outside, I have no idea what may have happened to him. My guess would be I don't fall to stranger abduction or violence. I more fall to like acquaintance, but I have no logic for why that happened.
I think it's the same reason I kind of feel that way too, is that it would have to be the ultimate timing for someone.
Yeah. But we know the ultimate timing exists. You know, it's not like...
I know, because we've also argued this in other episodes, but the fact is that each case has different minuscule circumstances that sway us in a different direction.
Agreed 100% with that. I think that my theory is something happened to him outside his dorm. And he left voluntarily. And it was probably to meet someone he knew. And I don't mean new like best friends. I mean like tangentially new through his college experience. Sure.
I'm right with you. I think for the first time in a little while, again, we agree.
I want there to be more facts. Like, I was super impressed the police jumped on this early, but how are there no more, there's no information?
You want to talk about people walking through a crime scene in a house. This is a college campus. Like, within no time, any evidence if he had left the dorm and something had happened along the path that he potentially took would be gone in hours, even before the police set foot on that campus.
Right. I agree.
So I'm going to open it up. I want to know what you guys think. There actually were several other theories.
Yeah, please do.
Whether I read something on Reddit or whatever, a lot of people have opinions about this case, so feel free to present it to us if you think that there's strong reason for that, or go check them out yourself and convince yourself of something. But we really like it when you let us know, and it really gets us thinking. So do that. Get in touch with us on all the social media.
Yeah, we love it. We love hearing it, and we love when you email us, and we love when you guys talk about each other, too. That, for me, is super interesting because seeing more dialogue is what prompts more thoughts.
Right. And we've been totally floored at the theories that you've thrown us our way on, like, Facebook and Instagram alone that have prompted us to be like, oh, my gosh, how did I not think of that? Or that's a really great point. So I can't wait to hear about yours on this case. And that's all I've got this week.
Yes.
I think that's plenty, too. We will catch you next week with a case from Melissa.
And I'm just warning you now. I have two that I'm, like, playing with, and one of them is a child. So either way, we will see what happens.
All right. Thanks so much, Melissa. And thank you, guys. We will see you the same time, same place next week.
Bye. Bye.
For more information about this case and other cases we've covered, visit our website at www.downtherabbitholespodcast.com.
Follow us and interact with us on social media. On Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter, we are Down the Rabbit Holes Podcast. You can also reach out to us via email at theories@downtherabbitholespodcast.com.
Down the Rabbit Holes Podcast is a 2002 production written, hosted, and developed by Amy Lamar and Melissa Benitez. Music by Kevin Wyman. Audio production by Amy Lamar.
It's time to get organized this new year with Menards. Update your closet system and add style today with Closet Culture. Choose from two closet finishes and four colors of shelf boards to create a functional yet stylish closet solution that matches your home decor. Check out all our Closet Culture closet kits or view our weekly flyer on Menards.com to see all the great deals happening now.
Save big money at Menards.
I was a soldier, then a veteran, a husband, and a father. And with my VA home loan, I'm a homeowner. No down payment required and no PMI. Build your future with the VA home loan. Get what you earn. Visit choose.va.gov.
Not all veterans are eligible for the type or amount of benefits mentioned here.